Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey folks, let's talk about our Amazon link at bobseska.com. I'm in the middle of setting up a podcast studio for Kimberly Johnson and Steph Walton. And not surprisingly, I was able to buy everything I needed from amazon.com, including cables, adapters, USB hubs, mic stands, technology I'll never fully understand, and so much more. Amazon has everything, and so can you when you go shopping through our Amazon link at bobseska.com. Just click the all caps link beneath the logo and you're all set. Using our link will take you to the front page of Amazon where you shop as normal, but because you used our link, we receive a small commission on some of your purchases. Thanks for shopping through our Amazon link, and now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Breaking news, the FBI today raided the offices of President Trump's longtime attorney, Michael Cohen, seizing records.
No. There is nothing he couldn't do. Cohen, me, Cohen, you.
Says who?
Says who?
Trump just has to face it this time. He's really through.
He's really through.
Trump's really through.
Cover ups are never easy. I know, but he has to go.
Trump's got to go.
Cohen, me, Cohen, you. It's the worst Trump can do.
Bob Seska.
You only drink when someone else says, hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
The Bob Seska Show.
I think we're on. Is this thing on? Hello.
Oh, my God.
Tap, tap, tap. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, May 7, 2019, and this is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com, the greatest soap ever. Hi, how are you? My name is Bob. What's up?
Hello, Bob.
Day 838 of the Trump crisis, 546 days until the 2020 presidential election. And, okay, so here's the deal. We're trying to get both Cliff Schechter and John Aravosis from the Unprecedented podcast on at the same time. That's hilarious because technology never works out. It never actually operates the way it's supposed to operate. So we have one half of the Unprecedented podcast. We got John Aravosis right here. Hi, John. How are you?
Oh, my God. I'm exhausted.
Me too.
No, you have people listening, you have no idea. We've already spent an hour having our own podcast trying to get Skype to work. And this other site called Source Connect that was also insane. But
yeah.
And that fault was, of course, Apple. Apple screwed
right.
us as far as trying to get Cliff on.
Yep.
But then Skype, I just tweeted this too. I said, remember when Skype used to work?
Yeah, I know.
It used to just work. Now Microsoft took it over and they had to change it. Now you get on Skype and, you know, I was on, Bob was on, each of our computers said the other person wasn't on. Cliff and I had the same problem before on Leslie Marshall's show. Cliff and I were on, Leslie could see Cliff, I couldn't see Cliff. It's like, it used to just work.
Yes, exactly. I've been using Skype for 10 years, John. 10 years I've been using that platform, and it gets worse and worse. And on top of everything else, every time I open up Skype, it automatically updates for some reason. I can only imagine just to make it worse. I mean, that's what they're doing. They're saying, hey, why don't we just screw it up for good this time? Why don't we make it impossible for anyone to, you know, make Skype calls on Skype. That's what we've been dealing with all afternoon so far. So we're running a little bit late. We don't have Cliff Schechter, but we'll see about getting him on next time. It is just, you know what? They just need to make the process of podcasting easier. And you say, oh, you sit in your underwear all day and talking to a microphone. How hard could that be? You have no idea how hard it is. It's a lot harder than it seems. But okay. So let's dig in here today, John. Patreon.com, by the way, patreon.com/unprecedentedpodcast. If you want to listen to the show. And remember the non-traditional spelling of unprecedented.
Yes, unprecedented, like exactly. The president who isn't a president.
Yeah. So, by the way, Buzz Burbank will be back next Tuesday. Everything's fine. Everything's okay. You can go get an update at his Facebook page. He's doing quite well, and I've spoken to him a couple of times. And so he'll be back next Tuesday. Okay, now that we got all that business out of the way, Trump is at 46% now, which means... Yeah. America has completely gone nuts again. John, you and I have been covering politics in the blogosphere and social media and everything like that, and now with podcasts, barely, for a good long time we've been doing this. And I remember when we kind of got started blogging, it was like America was just going crazy. America was having some sort of crazy nervous breakdown, and that was because partly... of 9/11, and you can kind of understand why an entire nation would just go indiscriminately bananas because of 9/11. I mean, it makes sense. It was traumatic. It was horrible to witness. There were thousands of people who were killed, and then the subsequent exploitation of that attack for the purposes of going to war in Iraq and so on, enriching Dick Cheney and all of his cronies. That was stressful, but now it's all entirely because there's this maniac in the White House, and for some reason... At this point, irrespective of all of the terrible things he's done, Donald Trump is at 46%, according to Gallup. And sure, it might be an outlier, but it just seems like people aren't watching. You know what it seems like? I feel like Annie Wilkes from Misery just screaming this.
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us. This isn't fair.
Of course. And I don't understand why this is happening. And maybe you can explain it to me, John.
Half of voters suck. No, I mean, I didn't think that way before.
Right.
I didn't think that way before. I was just talking to my mom about this yesterday. Mm-hmm. No, because, you know, mom is somebody who, the applause is still going. Mom is somebody who voted for Trump. Mm-hmm. And then literally, I think it was the end of January of what was that? I'm so tired. 2017.
Yeah.
Right. So right when he was sworn in, she calls me and goes, he needs to be impeached. He's crazy.
Yeah, I know.
And I was like, so she figured it out right away. You know, lifelong Republican, but moderate Republican, figured out right away. And now can't stand the guy. He needs to be gone. He's an embarrassment, whatever.
Well, they thought all along that what was going to happen is that he was going to suddenly pivot to being presidential. And of course, that never happened.
They thought he was going to pivot to be presidential, which is stuff I heard during the campaign.
Yeah.
You know, actually, Nate Silver had tweeted about it this morning and said, you know, look, people didn't like Hillary. I liked Hillary. People didn't like her. I mean, there was clearly, and after 30 years of the GOP noise machine attacking her, big surprise they didn't like her. But people didn't like Hillary. Trump was able to feed into all the nativism and the racism.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. People thought they would pivot and he would become normal-ish.
Yeah.
He wasn't. And the problem is that just that fart. And I say voters because let's face it, half the public voted, which means when you're talking about half of Trump supporters, you mean a quarter of the electorate, right?
Right, right.
But a quarter of the electorate is unfortunately nuts. But I mean that, though. I mean, and this is really kind of scary. What has depressed me the most and scared me the most and surprised me the most in the Trump era has been the support he continues to get from the Republican Party writ large, members of Congress, and the support he gets from Republican voters writ large, not just the crazy base. Fuck the base. I don't know if I can swear on your show.
Yeah, sure you can.
I never know, but I mean, forget the base.
Of course you can.
Fuck you!
Yeah, we curse on
you know what's funny? Actually, a friend years ago had told me we were at brunch, and she brought her like 6-year-old daughter, and she goes, You always swear when you talk politics. You gotta be careful about that.
You have to now.
Well, no. But what I didn't realize was it's only when I talk politics that it comes out. And I was like, oh, that's really, and this was now 15 years ago. So now I realize when I get into politics, it's like this other person who's angry comes, you know, right? You don't want to see me when I'm angry.
See, for me, it's anything. I always tell the story that when I was in college, I was a delivery guy for Domino's Pizza. And I remember standing there one day folding pizza boxes, endlessly as we wait for another delivery to make. And my manager turns to me and goes, you know, Bob, you'd make a great Domino's manager. And I said, oh, yeah? And he said, yeah, you would. Except for the fact that you say the word fuck too much. So there it was.
Here's your fucking pizza.
Yeah.
And of course I said, in 30 minutes or less. But I think that's something that we all have to keep focusing on, because it isn't just that Trump is an errant aberration. It's that the Republican Party was willing to continue supporting him when he took decidedly un-American positions.
Yep.
They, at the very least, whatever you say about the Republicans, I didn't think they were un-American. I thought on defense they actually gave a damn, and they don't. They're happy to watch him sell us out to Putin. They're happy to watch him sell us out to Kim in North Korea. That scares me. And then to watch Republicans overall see what a sleazebag this guy is, what a grifter he is, and to still support him and say we approve – that's sick, and it means we've got a much bigger problem in this country.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it's even solvable, because this is how, you know, this is how fascism comes. And I mean, you don't have to use the word fascism, but the point is, all those historical times we looked and we said, how is it all that crazy stuff happened in those other countries? They must have, oh, it's because the Jews didn't have guns, you know, or the NRA's argument about the Holocaust, right? It's always some crazy reason. Oh, that's because Germans let it happen because they're just bad people, you know, or in Africa, Rwanda, because blah, blah. We always find a special excuse that applies to them and doesn't apply to us because we're just better over here. And you see, yeah, it's not the Holocaust, but you see how Trump has done things that are so outside of the realm of acceptable for any American president that any other American president would have been impeached on day one. And he's not, because he's normalized it. And I'll stop with this, but half the population and the Republican Party, they're okay with normalizing stuff that just a few years ago was, you know, a death sentence politically.
Yeah.
And now it's not.
That's scary. I mean, remember, they screamed about Obama for 8 years and how Obama was implementing this gigantic power grab with all these executive orders and the Affordable Care Act, you know, giving people health care is just horrible. Yeah. And so what they were doing is screaming about, you know,
Obama's
authoritarianism. And here they are with Donald Trump doing that exact thing, as if Obama was anywhere close to what Donald Trump is doing, as if Obama was talking about, hey, you know what, let's have an additional 2 years onto my first term, you know, because I was being investigated because I'm a crook. And so maybe we'll just expand my first term as president to 6 years from four. And this is a legitimate point of conversation.
Well, you know what's funny? You bring that up, because that all happened in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
Pelosi was the first one to actually start talking about it this time around. This has come up before. About a year, maybe a year or so ago, maybe more, people started noting that Trump kept making these weird rumblings about maybe not leaving. And I remember even on our podcast talking to Malcolm Nance, and we were all agreeing and saying, I kind of have a feeling like we're going to be dragging his fat ass kicking and screaming out of the White House on January 20th or 21st, on January 20th, you know, 2021. And so then what happens, as you were just saying, in the last couple of days, he tweets and says, you know, Mueller stole the first 2 years of my presidency. And then he made some kind of a weird comment about, I don't know if you have it handy, but some kind of weird comment that almost sounded like he's literally saying, like, let's just not have elections in 2020 and let's have them in 2022 instead.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is, and again, we've seen it before, first Republicans are going to say, they're going to say off the record. They're not going to say it publicly. They're going to tell you and me, he's just being Trump. Don't worry about him. And then what happens is, as we approach the 2020 elections, Lindsey freaking Graham and Mitch McConnell are going to be out there publicly. And what's his name? Jim Jordan, spell it with a G, G-Y-M Jordan, are going to be out there talking about how, we need to postpone the elections for 2 years because Trump's presidency was stolen.
Yeah. And you know what?
That's going to happen. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That we're even talking about this.
The way they're going to do it is kind of the same way they were able to conduct a backdoor firing of Robert Mueller. They're going to do it quietly. They're going to do it in a way that seems like something else. Like they right now with William Barr, or as we were saying on your show, Bob Barr, Bob Barr, you know, with Bill Barr, what they've been doing is sort of this quiet, subtle operation behind the scenes where they were able to shut down Mueller's investigation. Apparently, I mean, we'll find out for sure from Robert Mueller next Wednesday,
right.
But it seems like they were able to do that. And then they were able to delay the release of the report for 3 weeks plus so that they could really get their hands in there and redact.
So that their lie could stick. We had three weeks of Bill Barr lying about what the report said. And that was repeated for 3 weeks. And the media believed him.
So what they're going to do is they're going to come up with some other pretext, some other reason to subtly change the election, or if the election goes forward, to subtly change how they approach the outcome. And you know what? The scariest part about it, John, is that for some reason I've been having this premonition that we have the election in November, and this is scary shit. It's all scary shit. But we have the election in November of 2020, and then obviously the Democrat wins, and then Donald Trump tries to undermine the results of that election to the point where it throws the whole thing into absolute chaos.
Yes.
And here's the real nightmare scenario. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer stepping up to a microphone and going, well, there's an inauguration day on January 20th, and we just need to wait until then to see who gets inaugurated. And so I could just see the Democrats weakly allowing this to happen. And that's my overall concern is that they're just, in the face of Donald Trump and all of this madness he's implementing, they're just terrified. They're horrified by what they're seeing.
I mean, the problem is, and I kind of defend them here to a degree, the problem is the Democrats have to be the big boys and girls in the room, right?
Yeah.
So when it comes to impeachment, Republicans can, you know, it's funny. In retrospect, I am not happy about what Bill Clinton did with lying about Monica under oath. Having said that, I remember, because, you know, we weren't really writing back then, right? We didn't have blogs and things back then.
Sure.
I remember telling a friend at the time, you know what? The Republicans had a witch hunt and they caught a witch.
Yeah.
In other words, they were just incessantly going after Clinton. It was totally unfair, but in the end, they did get him and it bothered me. And I remember telling a friend at the time, I said, you know, I don't want him impeached, but if Bill Clinton could just magically disappear as president and we had Gore instead, but he wasn't impeached and there was like no scandal, it was just kind of like magic.
Yeah.
Would you want that? And he said, oh yeah. And it was sort of, so we were, even as Democrats, we were divided because we realized even lying under oath about sex was really creepy for a president to do. You just don't lie under oath. You just don't answer the question, but you don't lie under oath, right? I mean, I'm not going to lie under oath. You don't do that. You know, to take it, I'm sorry, forgetting what I was saying, but sort of to take it back to where we are today.
Yeah.
It sounds crazy to even be discussing this concept of Trump not leaving, but I absolutely see him not leaving. I see it being a possibility. I see Lindsey Graham and everybody coalescing around it. We never thought they would try to steal a Supreme Court seat, and they did. I mean, we never even thought that shit was possible. They're going to do it. And what worries me is we almost don't have a choice because the alternative is like violence and civil war, right? I mean, think of, just throw this at you, Bob, and then jump in. But think about if, take us back to 2000, right? With the election thing, with Bush v. Gore and all of that. What if the Republicans had lost by 536 votes, more or less, in Florida, right?
Yeah, I know.
What if the Republicans had had the majority of the plurality of the public voting on their side? They won the vote, but they lost it because of a couple hundred votes in a state where clearly the system was totally fucked up in Florida. And then we got the presidency anyway. They wouldn't allow it. This last election, had the Republicans had the majority vote, they would have absolutely shut it down. They would have said, I don't care if you've got 306 or whatever electoral votes. You lost the majority vote or the plurality vote.
Yeah.
You don't get to be president. And then it's up to us to either have a civil war or to placate them and go, okay. And that's what worries me with this Trump thing is for Democrats to stand up to him even on pulling his ass out of the office means we literally have to say, Secret Service, it's your job to pull out a gun and tell him, I don't know who you are. The reason I'm mentioning the gun thing is because as of 12:01 on, I believe it's January 20th of the election of the inauguration, You are no longer president. You are no longer presidential staff. You are an interloper.
Yeah.
And Zbigniew Brzezinski had this happen. And there's a famous passage, I believe, in his autobiography where he talks about he had to stay to the last minute because he was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. And, you know, you never know. And we had the Iran hostage thing going on. He had to be there because, you know, what if there's a war during the inauguration, right?
Yeah.
National security advisor has to be there. He logs out at midnight, walks out the door, and he realizes he left something personal, his phone, I don't know what, his wallet in his office, and he turns around, and the guard stopped him.
Yeah.
And he went, guys, I just need to get out of my wallet. They said, sir, it's 12:01 p.m. You don't work here anymore. We can't let you in without a guest pass and blah, blah, blah.
That's awesome.
The same thing. Trump will just be an ordinary citizen at that point, mm-hmm. sitting in the Oval Office without an invitation, and they're going to have to remove his fat ass out of there, and it's going to be a mess.
Well, yeah. I mean, but if you remember going back to, again, Blogosphere 1.0, we're all following the George W. Bush administration, especially mm-hmm. leading up to the 2004 election. We were all like, well, you know what? I bet George W. Bush, there's a chance that George W. Bush is going to cancel the election because of the war on terrorism and so on, and we don't want to... Right. You know, a risk showing any sort of weakness by changing presidents halfway through, et cetera. But the problem was, at that point in time, we had no basis for that. Because there was no Bush tweet, or because Twitter didn't exist, first of all, but there was no Bush public statement in which they were hinting at the idea of seizing additional years in George W. Bush's first term or canceling the election for some reason. But now we've actually got not only Donald Trump retweeting Falwell, who was talking about it, but then also tweeting about it himself, where he said, well, maybe we need another 2 years because everyone is so unfair to me and all of my myriad crimes. It's just seems to make no sense. I mean, but we're actually being warned. On top of that, his former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, said that under oath in congressional testimony. So that if Donald Trump loses, there's a good chance, that he is not going to leave office. And that's just, it's a terrifying prospect. And I don't know exactly what can be done about it, because what they're doing is they're relying on the idea that the opposition, they're relying on the fact that the Democrats are operating with some sort of attachment to normalcy and reality. And they're exploiting that by pushing beyond normalcy, relying on the fact that the Democrats will only stick with normalcy. And we're already kind of seeing that with Nancy Pelosi. And I'm not an opponent of Nancy Pelosi. I like Nancy Pelosi. But I think what's going on right now is the Democrats are a little bit shell-shocked at what's happening all around them with Donald Trump and with the congressional Republicans. And so I think they're having trouble wrapping their heads around the concept that these guys aren't going to follow the rules. And we're seeing this contempt by Bill Barr. There's going to be a vote on that tomorrow. We've got Mueller next week. But meanwhile, they've blocked Don McGahn from handing over documents related to the Mueller investigation, related to anything involving. I mean, there was an entire list of documents they were looking for, all juicy, juicy items that you absolutely want to see, or at least you want to allow Congress to see these documents. Here's a really important question. I want to get your view on this, John. Why are these guys so willing to risk prison time? I mean, much less being smeared in the press, having their reputation dragged down by this maniac in the White House. Why is there this level of loyalty to the point where Don McGahn and Bill Barr and some of these other officials are just allowing themselves to be potentially rounded up and tossed in jail for contempt? I mean, what is keeping them loyal to this guy? I don't understand that.
Well, as you said, first of all, you know, Democrats aren't going to throw you in jail because it's not what we do. It's what they do.
Yeah.
So he knows in the end, Dems probably won't go as far. Now, let me step back, too. Part of the reason Pelosi's being careful about impeachment is, guess what? Republicans are really good at screwing us over. We're not as good at screwing them over.
Yeah.
You know, and again, look at what they did stealing the Merrick Garland appointment to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. They did a great job stealing it. We did a shitty job fighting back and we lost the seat. They're like on impeachment. I think they have, even though we're right, they have a very good chance at having impeachment blow up in our face if we try to impeach him.
Yeah.
That it blows up in our face, the public hates us, we lose the election, we lose the White House in 2020, we lose the House, and now we've got Donald Trump reaffirmed with both houses of Congress, and we're dead for the next 4 years, right? Could that happen? Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I am very sympathetic to why Pelosi is being very careful, and she's basically, I think Pelosi is trying to hold a line where she's saying, I didn't say I'm against impeachment. I said, let's have investigations, see where they go. But mm-hmm. it's premature to talk about it. And I think it is. You don't talk about impeaching the guy before we get the evidence. Mueller had a lot of evidence. We have not reviewed it yet. Right. You build the case.
Yeah.
So I'm OK with that. But what worries me is you said it's I guess my point is we have a bigger problem, which is we're not good at this. If we try to hold him accountable, we're not good. We're not good at the spin. They're good at blowing it up in our face. Mm-hmm. And you can't hold somebody accountable if you don't know how to sort of win the spin war, is my point.
Yeah.
And so therefore, I get a little upset when people say, do it anyway. It's the right thing. Well, that's nice. But in politics, I'm not here to fight for something because I know we're going to lose and then we're going to be set back for a decade and lose every freaking issue we care about because we lost the Congress and the White House.
Yeah.
No, that's not why we're here.
Well, what's going to happen, I think, with impeachment, and I don't think the impeachment vote is going to happen anytime soon, but I think it's going to happen at some point in the not too distant future. But what they need to do first before that ever happens is they need to put on, you know, as I've been saying on the show, they need to do a show. They need to, because we've seen in a poll already that only 3% of the American public has actually read the Mueller report. So what they need to do is they need to have a show so that the details of the Mueller report are on TV. And so it seems like that's underway. Like, we got Mueller coming up next week, which is, oh my God, it's going to be the biggest hearing that we've seen so far in the history of this entire goddamn crisis. And so that's going to be crucial to swaying public opinion toward the concept of impeachment. Certainly, they're not going to have the votes to impeach in the House if they don't convince enough Americans that impeachment is a worthy process. And the only way they're going to do that is through the show. So they're going to do a show. And so they're not going to do something that is potentially going to fail. They at least need to pass articles of impeachment in the House of Representatives. And whether it goes to a conviction in the Senate, that's a different story. I think what's going to happen is the election will come along and the clock will run out before they even get to an actual trial. In fact, I believe that Mitch McConnell will pull a Merrick Garland and say, well, we're not going to do a trial. We're going to wait and see what happens. And he's just going to drag his feet. He's going to, you know, he's going to go off and hump a crock. He's just going to start. Mitch McConnell's going to start having sex with a flip-flop or something and make this noise. But that's exactly what we're going to witness happening. So they're never actually going to come down to exonerating him. And there is another risk. If there is an impeachment process, after that impeachment process is over, all of the materials and all of the scandals and crimes that we're accusing Donald Trump of would kind of disappear at that point because they will have been adjudicated. And so, I mean, we can still pull like a Benghazi Fast and Furious butter emails thing.
We have Welcome to the Doghouse. I don't know if you can hear. Can you hear it?
Yes, I love it.
Yes. Well, I'm visiting mom's and she's got a dog and I've got a dog and someone's at the front door, which now means it's mayhem.
Yeah. The early history of doing this podcast, I had a couple of very, very large dogs who would just go bananas. And this show was peppered with all kinds of instances where I had to go, shut up.
Oh, that's exactly. Be like, Sasha, stop it! And you're like, thank you.
Right. So,
you were saying,
yeah. So, anyway, so there is a risk in the process of impeachment, but I feel like it's something that if they can get to a point where they have enough votes plus one, whatever, 218 votes, something like that, 219, they would need to have enough votes in order to pass it before they ever brought up articles of impeachment for a vote. So, again, there is a long way to go before we get to that point. But I do think that we need to get to that point because, I mean, if for no other reason but to send the signal to Donald Trump that, you know, or to future Donald Trumps. So let's say Donald Trump Jr. or future President Camacho. We can say, no, we're not going to deal with this kind of bullshit. We're not going to allow this kind of criminality in the White House anymore. And you're going to be held accountable if you do try anything along these lines. And so I think that is at least crucial as far as a signal to send. On top of the fact that I think it would go a long way to dispelling the notion sometimes the confirmed notion that the Democrats can be a little bit weak, at least the Hill Democrats, and too timid to, you know, to get into a fight with someone like Donald Trump. And so I think they need to overcome that a little bit. And I think proceeding on a path toward impeachment would do a lot toward dispelling that sometimes frustrating concept that, right. And again, you know, Chris Hayes the other night was interviewing Sidney Blumenthal and Richard Blumenthal. And Blumenthal was talking about impeachment, talking about holding Trump accountable. And Chris Hayes, I thought, brought up a pretty decent point. That is, I mean, it's difficult to prove, but you can kind of look at some of the video and kind of get that impression that the Democrats just seem scared. And I think this is kind of how they always seem. I mean, especially when we were watching Harry Reid, for example, step up and try to take on George W. Bush, and it just kind of falling flat and not getting the sense that these guys were taking a hardline posture against criminal behavior. As we're seeing a little bit of that now. Certainly there are outliers, members of the congressional Democrats who are taking a stronger posture against Trump. Adam Schiff, Jerry Nadler, certainly Maxine Waters. And they're just not taking any shit from this guy. And I think we need to see more of that. And I'd like to see a little bit more from Nancy Pelosi quite often. But to her credit, this latest set of quotes from her with regard to the 2020 election, while I don't agree that centrism is the way to defeat Donald Trump, I do agree that the priority with the 2020 election has to be to unseat Donald Trump, for Donald Trump to lose the election. That has to be the number one priority. And if that means going with someone that you may not necessarily support for the Democratic nomination, I think that's going to be something we're all going to have to we're going to have to swallow that.
That's also always the case. I mean, this is something that, you know, I'm going to be talking about till I'm blue in the face. You're electing a politician. You're not electing Jesus
right.
or Moses or Yehuda or whatever the hell the names are. I mean, people treat, and I think it's young people who may be new to politics. Mm-hmm. I also think there are certain political movements on the left that lend themselves to this kind of iography. It's one of my favorite words. Look it up. But it basically means sort of holiness. Iography is taking a politician and treating them as a deity, right? Mm-hmm,
right?
And you deify someone. You know, Bernie, nice guy if you like him. If he doesn't win, he loses. Hillary, same thing.
Yeah.
You know, go through any of the Democratic candidates. People need to get over themselves. And I'm already seeing it where, you know, Cliff and I talk about on the show who we like. Like, I like Buttigieg. I like Kamala Harris,
mm-hmm.
who I just learned it's Kamala and not Kamala.
Right.
I've been saying Kamala. It's Kamala. I like Kamala Harris. I like Biden. And I mean, I like more than that, but those are probably my top three. And you know what? I'm happy with any of them, but I'm also happy with almost anybody. I'm not going to be happy with Bernie, but I'll still support him. Tulsi Gabbard, that's a whole other question.
Yes, I know. I
right?
know.
I mean, you know, but you know what? Even Bernie. I don't like Bernie.
Right.
If he's the nominee, he has to win.
Yep.
And people need to sort of get over this whole thing. And honestly, Bernie's fed into it, but other candidates too. This whole idea of, you know, if it's not me, it's the establishment and they're evil. Mm-hmm. No, everybody else isn't. Other than Tulsi Gabbard, nobody else is evil.
Yeah. Yeah.
So people need to get over that.
Well, the key here, I think, is going to be convincing Democratic voters that this crisis is worse than you think. And, you know, I'm not really into the idea of scare.
Do you think we need to convince them? I mean, they don't know that now.
Well, you know what? I think the people who follow along on Twitter every day, yes, we all know. You and I know. Right. But I think there's a lot of people, there's a lot of rank and file voters in this country who lean Democratic, who haven't fully grasped the concept that we are under attack. Russia is engaged in an invasion against American sovereignty and to the core of our democratic process in this country. And that is a major crisis in and of itself. Then you add Donald Trump into the mix, where Donald Trump is completely overruling the rule of law with allowing some of these subpoenas to go through and so on. He is absolutely obstructing in plain view with Congress as the victims, as the American public as the victims, and the truth and the rule of law as the victims, too. And so this is just another crisis. And so but I get the sense that everyone's sort of just proceeding as if, well, this is normal politics. I feel like there's this normalization that has set in with Donald Trump, and it's really discouraging. I mean,
Democrats, I'm surprised. Among Democrats?
I know, but
no, I think the middle, I think, look, independents are the ones that scare me, because independents tend not to like Trump, but there's also, you know, you look at the polls that are where they break it down, and I forgot what it was in the last week. There was some poll breaking down a lot more of the details, mm-hmm. and the independents were being way too pro-Trump, and it was like, guys, stop being like this little Miss Flip-Floppy, I'm this way. And that scares me more than Democrats, although, sure, Democrats have got to be energized, but God, I think Democrats are pretty Why do you not think Democrats are there?
Well, I know. I think party activists are there. I think people who are following this on a day-to-day basis, I think we're all there. Certainly people who watch Rachel Maddow every night, we're all there. The problem is that I just get a sense from polling, and I get a sense from just taking the temperature of people around me who are on the Democratic side of the aisle. They just don't have a complete sense of the degree of the crisis at this point, and see, to know how bad it's truly become and how much worse it can get. Because, you know, again, this is someone who has no respect for the rule of law. He has no respect for the normal operation of the United States government. He has no respect for the institutions of this government, including the House of Representatives, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And so he is prepared to do anything that is required to make sure that he keeps his disgusting ass out of jail. And so that's his main priority. And he knows
priority, which is always making money, the other thing.
Yeah.
No, I heard about the Tiger Woods. He gave the Presidential Medal of Freedom or whatever to Tiger Woods. I heard about it and I immediately said, okay, A, he saw the guy on TV and said, I want to give him a medal. He's on TV, probably on Fox News. And then I said, how is this benefiting Trump financially? And my nephew goes, oh, Tiger Woods is in some business deal abroad in the Middle East, opening up some golf course with Trump. And I went, okay, see, I knew it. I knew there was some business reason fleecing his own pocket that he paid. Google it, but there's some weird business deal he's in with Tiger. And of course, this now gives more oomph to the deal. No, that's the crap. But that's also why I feel like impeachment... You know what impeachment reminds me of? Impeachment reminds me of socialism. Mm. And I get upset with people on the left, the socialist left, which isn't as big as it sounds on Twitter. You know, the polls show 10, 11% of the left, whatever. They're just very loud on Twitter and they're good at it or on social media. But I get upset with the socialist left. And I throw Ocasio-Cortez in this and I throw Bernie in this. Stop fucking calling yourself a socialist.
Yeah, I know.
Tell me what you want to accomplish. But, you know, why don't you just call yourself dog shit if that's what you're after? I mean, seriously, you know, if you want to use a term that people hate in this country, and it shows that even the majority of Democrats can't stand that term, let alone people in the middle and the right, then call yourself dog shit or pick a worse word. I was going to say something really bad. You know, Santorum, use that word, right?
Right.
Pick something just awful, because we, in politics, the goal is to get something done to help people and to help the country. Mm-hmm. It's not, oh, you know, I've got this pet term that I really like and I want to bring the pet term back because we need to make it okay for people to like the word socialism. No, you need to pass programs that are going to help people with health care, with the economy, right? I mean, with getting a home, with taking care of their kids.
Yep.
That's what we need to do. I don't freaking care what you call it. And I forgot what you said that got me thinking about this. What were we talking about that was the same? I said it reminded me of socialism. What were you saying?
Impeachment.
Impeachment. Same thing. Stop using a word that is intentionally divisive, that is intentionally a lightning rod. Because it lets Republicans say, oh, impeachment, sorry, they're jumping the gun. No. This guy, even again, I think people like my mom, people in the middle, everybody knows this guy's, everybody who we need already knows this guy is awful.
Mm-hmm.
Right? 45% of the country is crazy, but the rest of it, get it. Tell them, this is outrageous what the Mueller report shows. You know, walk people through it and say, we need to investigate this. Obviously, we need to understand what's going on. And Donald Trump himself has said that McGahn, his lawyer, lied to Mueller. That he did not tell McGahn twice to fire Mueller. That McGahn did not quit working for Trump because he refused to fire Mueller and that's why he left the off, right? Mm-hmm. Trump says that's a lie. Well, if Donald Trump's staff perjured themselves to Mueller, we need to, just in all fairness to Trump, we need to know that.
Yeah. Well, the
side... You know, but I mean, that's the argument. Mm-hmm. Fuck impeachment. And if it gets to the point that he needs to be removed from office, we'll get there.
Yeah.
But right now we need to know, is this true? And we've got a lot of the report we've got to delve in. That's the argument. It's not, the media puts us in a false bind, and I'm sorry, but people like Representative Tlaib do the same thing when she did her, you know, impeach the motherfucker crap that she did right after she got elected.
Yeah.
That's just freaking stupid. Yeah. I'm here to win. I'm not here to assuage the ego of some party activists who are to the left of me. That's not why we're here, guys. Yeah. We're here to win.
Well, timing is important. Framing is important. And the Democrats are notoriously shitty at framing. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Although we did okay on healthcare in the election, they did very well, though, in 2018, right? So sometimes we do very well at it.
But at the same time, you know, we're all following this close up. We all know what's going on. We're up to speed on it, on a very complicated issue. And I mean, just the Russia story alone, the Russian attack has so many different angles to it and so many different facts that are wound into the entire story. Obviously, we're going to be ahead of the ball game. I mean, we're going to be ahead of everybody in terms of interpreting all of that and knowing what it means. So certainly there are many, many just regular voters out there who may vote Democrat some elections and they may vote Republican some elections. But what happens is they need to get caught up before the process moves forward. And I believe that in the next or in the coming month or two, that catch up process will begin to take shape. And that'll all start next Wednesday. But before we go any further, John,
and hearings help with that, too. Hearings.
Yep.
You've got to slow. I don't want to sort of beat a dead horse, but you've got to slowly educate people over time.
Yeah.
And that's what hearings do, and it's what Republicans do. Republicans will talk about it for the next year or 2 years or 3 years about one point, and they'll keep saying, Obamacare, right? It sucked, it sucked, it sucked. The stimulus, it didn't do anything. Of course it did.
Yeah.
Of course Obamacare was pretty good, actually. Mm-hmm. But they keep saying it, and people believe it. We've got to do the same thing. Slow and steady wins the race.
Absolutely. Well, before we get into more on this, and there's obviously more constitutional crisis that we have to cover here, because we're deep into one now. I mean, now Donald Trump is challenging the authority of the House of Representatives. That in and of itself is a constitutional crisis. And we'll talk about that more in just a second. I think the main crisis for people listening right now is that Mother's Day is just a few days away and you've got limited time to order something for your mom. Now, here's the solution. John, I've got a problem. I don't want to say it's an addiction, but let's call it an obsession. I can't stop thinking about Shari's Berries. I can't stop craving Shari's Berries. I can't stop eating Shari's Berries. God help me. Berries.com, promo code BOBC. You can be a hero to your mom this week, I swear to God, by sending her the most decadent confection I have ever sampled. I've heard so much about Shari's Berries over the years through various podcasts. I was like, well, how good can they be? I mean, how great. I understand what they are. It's these gigantic strawberries, the size of your head, covered in chocolatey goodness. I mean, so incredibly delicious. I've heard that all along. And then they sent me some. And first of all, I got the box, and the box actually had heft to it. That's how large these treats are inside. And I popped one open and I said, okay, I'm going to take a bite out of one of these things. I'm not a big fan of like fruit with chocolate or chocolatey goodness or chocolate chips or anything like that. I'm not a big fan of those things together. At least I haven't been in the past. And then I bit into one of these things and the juice just running down my arm, so meaty and tasty and sweet and decadent. Unbelievable, gigantic strawberries the size of tennis balls combined with a variety of confections. Shari's Berries has special Mother's Day berries designed just for mom that are topped with chocolate chips, pink shimmer sugar, and swizzles. You can choose your delivery date to ensure that mom gets your gift of Shari's Berries exactly when you want her to, and your satisfaction is always guaranteed. Don't wait until the last minute. Visit berries.com today to order freshly dipped strawberries starting at $19.99 for all the moms in your life. And to make mom really happy, you can double your berries for just $10 more. That's two boxes of berries that are bigger than your head for just $29.99, but only if you use the promo code BOBC. Again, the promo code is BOBC. Mother's Day is Sunday, this Sunday, May 12th, so visit berries.com. That's berries.com. Click on the microphone in the upper right corner and enter my code BOBC. That's berries.com. Click the microphone and use the promo code BOBC. They are delicious.
The Bob Seska Show. We were marching in the line and heading for it, but our route was asinine and you ignored it. Lost in the grand applause when the wizard's taking over Oz. I'm the Tin Man and the Scarecrow all in one. And you can try to comprehend it all when the truth was the first to fall, but integrity will not be outdone. It's a lie, but we ain't gonna call it. Not drunk, but we're already falling. Down, down, away we go. Stop telling me what's the alternative.
It's a lie.
This is Jeremy Dion. The song is called Alternative Facts.
Down,
I love it. From the More Lately album, jeremydeon.com. We're going to put the link in the description below. Okay, so we're back with John Aravosis from America Blog and the Unprecedented Podcast here today. Okay, so let's get caught up with where we are, all the shit that's been going down over the last 24 hours or so. So, first of all, Mitch McConnell said the case is closed, so we're moving on. I guess we're all done. The Russians aren't attacking anymore.
Did you hear part of what McConnell actually said? I was watching it this morning. Yeah. He actually went off about, and the Democrats, they hate Donald Trump more than they do Vladimir Putin.
Oh, my God.
Because he was saying, right, because yeah, the party out there who doesn't care about Vladimir Putin is the Democrats, not the Republicans.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is where their balls comes in. Mm-hmm. If you were a Democratic advisor, you'd say, boss, excuse me, a Republican advisor. If I were advising a Republican, I'd say, you can't talk about Putin. As soon as you talk about Putin, the Republicans are going to be down our throat talking about all the press conferences, the Helsinki summit, Trump saying that he told Putin again last week that the Russia probe was a hoax. I mean, we can't bring up Putin or it'll be turned around on us. McConnell does it, and this is our fault. McConnell does it. Democrats should be lined up today talking about, oh, well, that's interesting because Trump did this with Putin, but we don't.
Yeah.
So they feel like they've got the balls to literally accuse us of sucking up to Putin when it's them.
Yeah, exactly.
They're good at this.
I've always said, we've got the truth on our side. We have reality on our side. You know, we even have people like Bill Kristol, for God's sake, who are on our side right now. You know what? Just get some backbone and use the truth and get out there and say the hard things that need to be said. Don't worry about what Trump is going to do or what Trump is going to tweet. Get your war faces on, Democrats, and start pushing for the things that need to be pushed for in the midst of this crisis. Americans are looking for leadership in this, and they're not getting it from Donald Trump. And that means that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and the Democratic candidates for president need to step up and take over that role and really show some spine in this, quite honestly. Honestly, and spine that we haven't necessarily seen, but for, you know, a few remarks by some of the candidates. And that's, to me, we need more of that. We need it to be louder. We need it to be more forceful, more ferocious, as the case may be. So, but meanwhile, like Kellyanne Conway today. I mean,
what did she do?
Well, you know, I don't spend a lot of time talking about Kellyanne Conway, but this feeds into this thing where the administration doesn't know which end is up, because she said today Putin and Russians see us still arguing about Russian interference in the election that did not exist. So
she said that?
Yes, she said the interference. And first of all, point of order on the language that we're using about this, Democrats. Interference is a penalty in football. Meddling is something that the Scooby-Doo gang does to evil carnies. What we are in the midst of is an attack and an invasion. And you know, members of Congress have already referred to this as an act of war. It is standard. It is believed throughout the intelligence community that a cyber attack is an act of war. And a cyber attack of this caliber, of this serious level of seriousness, where they were actually able to infiltrate our elections, their technology is improving, and the next time this happens, which is ramping up now, it's going to be even more effective than the last time. So it's just like there are so many things that need to be addressed in all this and overcome, in addition to all the domestic obstacles to making sure our votes count. We got to deal with this other thing now, this Russian thing that the commander in chief refuses to even acknowledge, much less do anything about.
But that would be another example. Had a top Democratic White House official made some ridiculous comment about just that, once again, saying Russia never attacked us in the last election, you would have Fox News, which is a point Cliff always makes, Cliff Schechter, who does the podcast with me. Cliff is always saying how they've got Fox News, so they could have like an entire lineup of shows from here to eternity talking about how ridiculous and horrific it is what this White House official has said, right? We don't have that. You know, we've got CNN, we've got MSNBC, but they're still kind of independent. I mean, not kind of. CNN's totally independent, as is MSNBC. Good luck making Rachel Maddow cover something. I mean, I love Rachel, but you're not going to make Rachel cover anything, right?
No.
Whereas Fox News, my God, you know, you talk to the deadly overlord, and they're all going to snap and say, yes, sir, at least the evening crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's exactly
Laura Ingraham and the rest of them. So that's part of the problem is – oh, God, I mean, I just imagine the response they would have if we did something like this and it would then become a national news story. With us, it's The other problem, too, is we've gotten used to it. Oh, yeah, another senior White House official is once again claiming America, you know, Pearl Harbor never happened. Okay. Right. La la la.
I always go back to the 9/11 metaphor. Well, I mean, imagine George W. Bush behaving the way Donald Trump is right now in the wake of 9/11. Like, basically saying, you know what? I think we should have a line of dialogue between us and Al Qaeda. I think I need to have a summit with Osama bin Laden. I mean, it's just be mad, utter and complete madness. I mean, to the point where, I mean, can you imagine, like, I'm trying to remember the name of the head of the Taliban. I think his last name was Omar. Is this like
Mullah Omar?
Yes, thank you. And you imagine George W. Bush saying, "Ah, you know what? I voluntarily called Omar this morning. We talked for an hour and a half, and he doesn't agree that 9/11 happened.
He denied it. He denied it. He didn't just deny it. He strongly denied it.
Right, right. And that would be madness, utter madness. People would go nuts, and they would have
but
a
again,
right to
that's
go
our
nuts.
Fault. But Bob, that's and when I say our, I don't mean yours and mine, but I mean
I know.
And it's not just Democrats. The left overall, we are not good at responding to these things. We're also not good at sort of towing the line over. First of all, we're not good at agreeing, right? Mm-hmm. So you and I would be talking about that. Justice Democrats would be, you know, attacking some Democrat for being a sellout.
Yeah.
I mean, right? I mean, they'd be primarying some Democrat next time. Somebody else would want to talk about climate change. We couldn't get people to agree on anything.
Right. Greenwald on Tucker, you know.
Glenn would be pointing on the little doll where America hurt him. You know, I mean, you know, couldn't you say it? Show us, Glenn. Yeah. Show us on the doll where America hurt you.
Oh, man. You know? Unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable.
You know, but
that
it's
guy.
But that's part of the problem is we're not. And the other thing is, and I've seen this time and again with Democrats, I've seen it with clients I've had, but also Dems overall.
Yeah.
Oh, we already put out a press release on that topic. And I'm like, yeah, you need to talk about it every day for the next 2 years for it to start to sink in.
Yeah.
The whole Russia hoax, how many times, Kellyanne did it again today, how many times do they reiterate? Almost once a day, you hear somebody, some White House connected official or somebody senior talking about how it didn't happen. And now with the Mueller report, you're seeing the same thing. Every day you're hearing somebody, McConnell did that lie again this morning too, you're hearing somebody misportray the Mueller report and say it totally exonerated Trump.
Yeah.
And they're going to do it every day. And even when we stopped Obamacare, the stimulus, like I said, even when we stopped talking about it, they still talked about it every day and how bad both of those are. And it starts to sink in. I don't know what it is. We're never going to change. But our side just really doesn't get how to do messaging. And I don't know. I maybe we are too disparate too, though. I mean, I think there's something in the psyche of the left that – you know, we are hurting. We are like cats trying to be herded, and the right actually comes together in the end. We don't. We all got our little fiefdoms, and we get upset our guy didn't win the primary, and we don't vote, you know?
Yeah, we have 65 million chefs in the kitchen, and that's the problem, where we all have a sense of
65 million cats, but yeah, even better.
Well, yeah, that, yeah, exactly, that too. And so that makes it extraordinarily challenging to have a cohesive message, and because everyone thinks that they have individually the best message for the Democrats. And you know what? I'm just as guilty as anybody else. I think I have the best message for the Dems. I'm sure you do too. But there is no cohesive way to bind all of that together and to create one single message that we're all operating from. Because, you know, I get the sense too that there's no urgency to go down that road either. Because, you know what? There is something to be said for the idea of churning a bunch of ideas around just to see what pops out the other end. To shove everything into the meat grinder and see what kind of product we get at the other side. And so, you know, that can have some benefit too. But at the same time, it makes it nearly impossible when you've got a rank and file kind of party like the Republican Party, just, you know, rubber stamping every single goddamn thing that Donald Trump says, no matter how batshit crazy it is. And again, I go to this, the original point that I asked you about at the top of the show, John, which is that I don't understand why these people are so willing to attach their reputations, attach their names to the madness coming out of the White House. It just seems incomprehensible to me that they would, in fact, going so far as to risk prison for themselves in defense of this guy. I mean, I can understand, like, maybe George W. Bush in the days after 9/11. You go to prison for a president like that if you're a Republican. But not Donald Trump, who's just a self-destructive wanker of the highest order. I mean, this guy is just a walking, talking disaster area, and they're behaving as if he's fucking Gandhi, as if he's like the fucking Republican messiah, and he's nowhere close to being any of those things. I mean, my God, we see examples of that every damn day. I mean, no matter what he does, he's never going to be more popular than 40-45%. And even that is just too much. But I think he's got a floor that's a lot lower than that. It's just a matter of how the musical chairs stack up. Like if he ends up down at 37% in September of 2020, then that's going to be good news for everybody. But if he's at 45% in September of 2020, that's going to be a little bit more difficult because then he only needs to pick up another 4 or 5%. And depending on how the Electoral College shakes out, I mean, that could be another victory for him. In fact, you know, John, I've just been trying to wrap my head around the idea, not that I believe he's going to, but I'm just trying to wrap my head around the idea of, well, what if he does get reelected? I mean, what happens then? And so then I start to think about, well, we got to make sure to retake a majority in the Senate. That's going to be the main thing. If Donald Trump gets reelected, got to make sure we have at least 51 votes in the goddamn United States Senate to at least block any congressional linkage between the president and Congress. Because I can only imagine the nightmare that would happen if Donald Trump is reelected. And can you imagine? Remember, George W. Bush was reelected in 2004 and immediately declared that he's got all this political capital. And the first thing he did with his political capital in 2005 was to try to privatize Social Security. And he spent all summer of 2005 leading right up to Hurricane Katrina trying to privatize Social Security. It was a disaster. So
actually, take it back 4 years before.
Yeah.
I have never been able to find this quote because the internet was just sort of, you know, it was there, but it wasn't as big back then.
Right.
But 2001, I want to say it was right after Bush was sworn in.
Mm-hmm.
And Cheney said, and I just can't find it anywhere, but Cheney said something to the effect of, or Cheney was quoted as giving Bush the advice of, govern as if you have a mandate.
Yeah. Yep.
And because remember, Bush lost the popular vote and it was really questionable whether he even won because of the Florida mess. And Cheney's advice was, I'm paraphrasing now, be a fucking bull in a china shop. You own the place. Run as if 99% of the, you know, as if you're, you know, you're Kim Jong Il. I'm getting them all mixed up now. Kim Jong Un. That's right. Il was the father. Un is the son.
Yes.
You know, as if you're a North Korean dictator and you got 99.9% of the vote. You know, I mean, that's what they do, and they're very good at it. Now, let's take that back a second. You got me thinking again on the, like you said, why would Republicans side with him? Why would they risk their lives? Why would they risk their livelihoods, go to jail, et cetera? I started thinking about this because it kind of comes with the same point we said about how is it the Republicans are always to have a unified message? How is it when election time comes, Republicans always come home and support their candidate and Democrats, we're still fighting this war of, you know, but is Hillary a sellout enough? Is there really a difference between Hillary and Trump? You know, that kind of crap. I think Republican, you know, to quote Sylvia Plath, one of my favorite poets, Sylvia Plath wrote, and I believe it was her poem Daddy, my favorite.
Wait, there's just too much culture for this show.
No, people can handle it. But
I do fart sounds.
There you go. But she wrote a poem that is actually very PLATH called Daddy that she's writing about her father, and it's vicious. Yeah. But part of the poem, there's a line that says, every woman loves a fascist. Now, you got to get into the poem to see it, but I think every Republican loves a fascist, that there is something in that party, and Trump has proven it even more, but we knew it. We knew it with the way they went after Merrick Garland. We knew it with the way they went after Obamacare. We knew it with the way they defend their tax cuts, the way they talk about the same issue every day for 3 years in a row until it sinks in and we don't. They have discipline. They like discipline. They like marching orders. They like somebody strong on top telling them what to do.
Yep.
They've got daddy issues, and if the daddy issues comes through when it's election time and they all snap to attention and go, yes, sir. The daddy issues come through when Mitch McConnell tells them, when Donald Trump says, you know, ignore the, you know, man behind the curtain who's giving a blowjob to the Russian premier. You know, I mean, it's they don't care. They just want somebody strong to tell them what to do, and they don't care whether it totally goes against everything that they claim they believe in. We're not, or even just like I said, if it's an ongoing message campaign, just tell me what to do, Fox News, or tell Fox News what to do. They're waiting to salute, and Fox News's viewers are waiting to salute.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone is waiting for somebody more important than them just to give them the goddamn message so they can be good little Germans.
Yeah,
we don't do that. They do, and therefore, guess what? You're not dealing with great human beings. So that when push came to shove, Trump was worse than we could ever imagine. And guess what? Republicans went, as long as he's telling me what to do, I'm happy.
Right, right.
It's not even just an abused spouse. It's a spouse that seems to really, I don't know, they want somebody stronger running their lives.
So how does this play out, John? How does this this fracas with Congress and the White House play out as far as the back and forth? I mean, okay, so we're at this point now where the request was refused. The requests, plural, were refused by right. the White House. So then the Congress issues subpoenas, and those are refused. And then that's going to go to court. How does this all end up? I mean, at some point, one of the sides has to cave, and I'm not sure which side that's going to be, because I get the sense that even if these subpoenas go all the way to the Supreme Court, that Donald Trump is going to defy the Supreme Court. I think Donald Trump is going to pull an Andrew Jackson. I think because Donald Trump has this, his spirit animal is Andrew Jackson for some reason, because Andrew Jackson was a fucking maniac. And what we need is a second Andrew Jackson. Thank you very much.
Well, I mean, he can try. Then things get interesting, because I was listening to somebody explain this the other day. Mm. You know, it's one thing for Nancy Pelosi, and it wouldn't be Pelosi, of course. It would be Nadler issuing a subpoena, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's another, because that's a congressional subpoena. It's another thing for a court to order the administration to do something, for a federal court to order the administration to turn over documents, and for the administration to say, fuck you, we're not going to listen, even if the Supreme Court finally says, yes, we stand by the lower court.
That's right.
They're going to say, we're not going to do it. The federal court absolutely has the ability and will throw your ass in jail. They may not do it to Trump, but they'll do it to the official who was, if McGahn is ordered to turn something over and he doesn't, McGahn's going to go to jail.
Yeah.
So you do have that. That what is good is in the end, yes. But along the way, Trump obviously has decided he's going to say no to everything between now and the election. Mm-hmm. And again, Trump and the Republicans are just good enough that they might, I think they're very upset they didn't get impeachment. They were very upset about that. Hmm. So now, they were even complaining, right? They were even complaining out of the White House that Mueller didn't find obstruction of justice, because he did.
Yeah.
They were complaining that Mueller didn't indict Trump.
Yeah.
And we're really going, they were upset because they wanted Mueller to indict Trump.
Mm-hmm.
They want a battle. They want an impeachment fight.
Yeah.
I had said before the election, by the way, even a year ago, I said, if I were Donald Trump, I would undercut the Republicans and try to get Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats elected in the House. Because the only way Trump's going to get reelected is if he's got an enemy. He needs another woman to go after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Basically, right? He's got Pelosi. So I don't know. I mean, I think, look, all we can do is take them to court and follow the normal processes.
Yeah,
and hopefully, and in the meantime, we've still got the Mueller report. We've still got witnesses who can testify. I mean,
yep.
Mueller's coming next week, knock on wood. Let's see what he says, because Mueller has severely disappointed me, and I know he has you too. We had you on our show talking about your article about it.
Mm-hmm.
Mueller, I think, unfortunately, Mueller is actually, just like you say about Democrats, Mueller's almost trying to play by the rules too much of the old rules.
Yeah, in fact, I saw someone on MSNBC last night saying something to the effect of, well, if you look at the Mueller report and read between the lines, what you see is Mueller suggesting that maybe, and then implying this, and I'm going, no.
Yeah.
He should have said it clearly and unequivocally, and then he should have, once the Mueller report was issued and handed over to Bill Barr and the Barr memo came out, Robert Mueller should have stepped in front of a bunch of microphones the following Monday or Tuesday or something like that. Tuesday is even better because more people are paying attention on Tuesday, and said what he needed to say factually and to the point in clear words that everyone can understand. And that never happened. And that's why we're in this place now where everyone's like, well, I don't know what's going on. I don't care. And then you open the front door of your house and crickets are chirping and nothing's happening.
If Mueller were a true American hero, he would go to Congress and say, I am no longer the special counsel. I am not here as the special counsel. Mm-hmm. I am here just like James Comey was here. I am here as a private citizen who happened to run the FBI.
Yep.
And I am going to tell you my opinion of what I wrote. As the former head of the FBI looking at that report, absolutely it's somebody I would want to indict. I mean, he should literally tell the freaking truth as the former head of the FBI. And, he was doing this sort of, obeisance, or, which I love, that's another good word too, where he was sort of getting down on his knees and genuflecting to Bill Barr, because Barr was his boss.
Mm-hmm.
So, so he was kind of doing fact finding, and I'm guessing here, but, he wanted to provide the defects to Barr, and then Barr could decide, and it wouldn't be appropriate for him to reach a conclusion, and it wouldn't be appropriate for him to say this is outrageous behavior. Because also, you get into the weird thing, you get into the weird situation where and there's a kernel of truth to it. Mm-hmm. You know, we got upset at Comey for making all these bizarre conclusions about Hillary that weren't legal conclusions, saying, well, it was pretty outrageous what she did, even though it wasn't illegal. Well, fuck you. You know, so you do get into that weird thing where you don't want justice officials sort of commenting negatively on people when there aren't crimes involved. In this case, though, we actually think there are crimes involved, and he ought to say, yeah, if there wasn't a statute there, I would have recommended an indictment. Yes. I mean, that's the kind of thing he needs to kind of step up and be an American hero at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
That's the problem. And I agree with you. He's playing under old rules, and he's playing as if we've got a normal administration here and we don't. And we need some heroes.
Before we're going to take one last break and come back, and I want to talk about Joe.
Then I got to eat because honestly, I'm fucking famished right now because we were supposed to be done by 1:30, but we had this Skype problem. I'm serious. I'm out of my mind with hunger. So
yeah,
a little longer, but I got to stop because I got to eat.
Okay. We're going to take one last break. We're going to talk about Joe Biden when we come back and then wrap
then
up the show. Sounds good. Back after these words.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius. Doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska.
This is Richard Turgeon covering Damaged One by Big Head Todd and the Monsters. We played this on Friday's After Party, giving it another roll here on the free show. John Arvosis is here from America Blog and the Unprecedented Podcast, patreon.com/unprecedentedpodcast. John, I want to talk to you about Joe Biden here for a second. We mentioned Joe Biden a few minutes ago, and I don't know that Joe Biden is necessarily the guy to lead the Democrats through the primaries and into the general. And it's not... It's for a variety of reasons that I've kind of, I'm not anti-Joe Biden. I'm just skeptical about whether Joe Biden's going to have what it takes to actually be the nominee in all of this. And part of the problem is, and again, I don't want to give too much credence to this because it's a bullshit scandal. But I'm sure you've heard about the Ukraine thing with Joe Biden. Now, what happened?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just to give people a little bit of background on this very briefly. First of all, I wrote a Salon piece about that. It should be up today, right now at salon.com. I'm not entirely sure. So if it's not, it's not. And if it's not, it'll be up soon. Regardless, what happened was during the Obama administration, Joe Biden went to Ukraine and lobbied the prime minister in Kiev to fire the prosecutor general, who happened to have been investigating an energy company called Burisma Holdings. Well, it turns out that Joe Biden said that we're going to withhold $1 billion in loan guarantees unless you get rid of this guy who's the prosecutor general. And it turns out the energy company that the prosecutor general was investigating, Hunter Biden sat on the board. And so it looks like, and imagine you're Donald Trump and you see this story. You're thinking, oh, this is going to be really easy to frame.
Why wasn't I part of that deal? That's what you're thinking.
That's exactly right.
Are you kidding?
He's like, oh, shit, I should have gotten my grubby little tiny stumpy hands on that one. But I mean, the fact is that he's going to make it seem as if Joe Biden paid Ukraine $1 billion to drop an investigation into his own son. That's going to be the framing coming from the Trumpers. And it's already starting to happen. I just wanted to mention that Don Jr. is already tweeting about it. Let's see here. He tweeted, sounds like creep. He sounds like sleepy Joe Biden has some explaining to do. And then, of course,
he's like me.
Yeah,
he's an idiot. Well, yeah. Don Jr., whatever.
Don. Oh, you mean whatever. Next president of the United States, Don Jr.?
I know. I
it's
mean,
terrifying.
Yeah, whatever.
Utterly terrifying. But what he was doing is tweeting this article from the Daily Caller, Tucker Carlson's Daily Caller. It says, confirmed Hunter Biden was paid by the Ukrainians while his father was vice president. Joe Biden forced Ukraine to oust the prosecutor who was investigating his son's company. Just as I predicted would happen last week. Here it is taking shape. So basically, not only are they going to be able to say that Joe Biden is crooked and used American taxpayer money to get his son off the hook, but now they're going to say, oh, look, the Democrats and the Obama administration were colluding with Ukraine. How about that? And then on top of all of that, I'm fairly certain Donald Trump asked Bill Barr to investigate the whole thing, to open an investigation, which is why Kamala Harris asked Bill Barr in his testimony the other day, has the president asked you to conduct any investigations? And of course, what we heard back from Bill Barr was the usual confused.
And,
he didn't quite know how to answer Kamala Harris's questions. He just kind of stammered and just eventually refused to even give a response to that. And so you've got all these dimensions to this story, and I just know they're going to use this. This is going to be the 2020 version of butter emails. Get ready. If you're on Team Biden, get ready to be swatting this one down every day, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know a ton about the story, but just from what I'd read already.
Yeah.
Now that we're getting all the details, what a surprise, it's falling apart. Uh-huh. Like now we find out. Oh, the U.S. government for years had problems with this guy.
Yes.
And for years we'd been complaining. So Biden was actually executing U.S. policy that had been on the books for years.
Right.
And we have documents to support it. So, you know, what a surprise. But look, Benghazi was a bunch of bullshit, too. These guys are very good at taking bullshit and turning it into, you know, chocolate mousse. Ooh, that was scary. It seemed to be the appropriate segue, though.
Yeah.
No, but they are. So there's enough here. You know, his son's involved. They love going after children, so why not? No, they're going to lie about it, and they're just going to. But the problem is, it is but her emails.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I think Hillary did a really bad job responding on it, and I'm hoping Biden will do better. I don't know. But not to rehash the Hillary thing, but again, I was a big Hillary supporter, not a Bernie supporter. But every time she talked about it, I felt like she was looking for a new way to explain it rather than having a solid answer. I mean, she should have freaking said, I'm old.
Yeah.
You think I know what a fucking email server is?
Right.
I told my staff to set me up an email. They did. They screwed up. We were wrong. Now I know and we'd never do it again.
Yeah.
End of story.
Well,
and that's it.
Obviously.
But you got to also have a good answer that nails it down and goes, yeah, we answered that. It was in retrospect. Yeah. If my son was on the board in retrospect, we should have had another official talk about presidential policy that had been in place for years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't change anything. But sure, I would have picked somebody else now.
Well, in fact, I mean, if you look at the details of the story, the Obama administration never opposed the investigation. In fact, what happened was the Obama administration supported the investigation into Burisma. And at the same time, the subsequent prosecutor general, the person who replaced the guy that the Obama administration wanted ousted, continued the investigation. So and eventually came up with findings and punishment for the founder of Burisma Holdings and Burisma Holdings itself. So this continued on. It wasn't like Joe Biden went over there and said, fire that guy and then the investigation will go away and then we'll all be good and walk away and everything's fine. That's not what happened. The investigation continued and with the support of the administration and obviously with other international support. There was no tat in any alleged tit for tat along those lines. Meanwhile, it's quite possible and certain, in my opinion, that Rudy Giuliani persuaded the Ukrainian government to reopen the investigation after meetings earlier year with both. Both of the former prosecutor general and the current prosecutor general in New York City. And during one of those meetings, according to the Times, Giuliani, quote, called Mr. Trump excitedly to brief him on his findings. So basically, an investigation that was already done and it wrapped up completely.
Yeah.
Rudy went over there and said, hey, reopen that. Well, he didn't go over there. They came to us. They came to New York. Yeah. They came to Rudy. And Rudy said, keep your investigation going. And they went, okay. And so now they're reopening the investigation. It's just like, oh, fuck, here's what they're doing again. They're doing this again. They're the ones who are colluding with a foreign government to give themselves an advantage in the election. And they're making it seem as if that's what the other side, that's what the Democrats are doing. It is absolute bullshit. Yeah.
I pulled up PolitiFact because I like PolitiFact. Sometimes they get stuff wrong, but they're pretty good. They try to be fair, right? Just sort of impartial looking. And of course, and I will say this, PolitiFact actually did a great, they called the accusations half true, which is, this is where PolitiFact is being bullshitty, because the half true part, and they did a pretty good explanation. The half true part is, yes, Biden did call or threaten to withhold $1 billion in U.S. aid to Ukraine if they didn't fire a prosecutor looking into a gas company on which his son sat on the board.
Right.
That is true. Mm-hmm. The half part that isn't true is that it had anything to do with Biden's son being on the board, is what PolitiFact says.
Right.
They said the entire West was, just what you said, but it more of a snippet. The entire West was united in saying this prosecutor had to go. His cases against the company had long been dormant. So that what PolitiFact said was, it's A, clear that Biden did it because it was Western policy, not because of his son. And B, it's not even clear it benefited the company because all the cases the prosecutor was doing were already dormant and stale. He wasn't doing them anymore against the company. So what pisses me off a little bit, though, and this is where, again, the media has to do its job better.
Yeah.
You don't say half true. It's actually not true. Sure, what's half true is his son was on the board of the company. The company was being investigated. But the part that isn't true is that Biden had any, that Biden did this for any untoward reason. That part's not true.
Right.
Well, then the whole claim is really, it's 100% false, really. It's not half true. When you read half true, you go, oh, well, hey, it's half true that Biden did a really bad ethical. Now, I will say this. Yes, somebody should have sat there and said, you know, boss, you shouldn't be speaking, even though Obama told you to, and even though the entire West is united against this guy, you shouldn't be the one speaking. Well, actually, I wonder whether his staff even knew at that point, because it's not like Biden did something for the company. Biden was speaking about a prosecutor, and you had to know that his son was on the board of one of the companies the prosecutor was investigating, but hadn't investigated in a very long time.
Yeah.
His staff might have not even known that, and Biden maybe didn't even know that, to be honest.
Well, hey, look.
If they knew it, they should have had somebody else do it. Yeah.
I mean, the bottom line, ultimately,
but
in the story.
That's the appearance. It's not an actual conflict. It's the appearance of a conflict that you always try to avoid, but it's not an actual conflict.
Well, even still, it wouldn't matter if this scandal existed or not. And I don't even know if I should even really be calling it a scandal. But if this story didn't exist at all, hey, Trump would make shit up. I mean, that's what, I mean, ultimately, what this comes down to is, no matter what the Democrats do to oppose Donald Trump, no matter what stories or problems the Democrats find themselves in, it doesn't matter, because even if those things didn't exist, Trump would just make shit up. He would they're always going to find a reason to discredit and attack the Democrats. They're always going to find a process to completely and totally gaslight us to the point where we all feel like we're going bananas, and we're really not. It's them who are crazy. I mean, for God's sake. But of course, you know, facts and reality are completely irrelevant now. We're through the looking glass, and I'm terrified right now that things have become overly normalized with this guy. And I'm just getting the sense that we're kind of there. We're kind of in that normal place with Donald Trump. I mean, again, the smaller shit, the shit that would have taken down any other president, we're just kind of like, oh, okay, what else?
And that, what's, I mean, next? And that almost should be Joe Biden's response.
Yeah.
He should sit there and go, yeah, I shouldn't have been the one making the call, even though we all know it didn't make any difference. Mm-hmm. But seriously, you who have got 21 women, more or less, right? 20 women, two dozen, whatever it is, 20 women who have credibly accused you of sexual assault. You who sat down and gave Vladimir Putin a fucking blowjob on national TV. You've got the nerve to ask me?
Right.
You've got the nerve to criticize me, but that's okay. You shouldn't mention blowjobs, but that's the kind of response that Democrats, because here's the thing. And again, this is PR.
Yeah.
The media is going to cover Joe Biden's response. So he has to make sure his response weaves in a brutal attack on Trump so that all of a sudden it's like, and Joe Biden responds that Donald Trump was sexually assaulted 24 women and, you know, did this with Vladimir Putin. You make sure you keep talking about everything he did, the Mueller report, obstructing justice, so that every time Trump brings it up, he knows he's going to get three more things thrown in his face. That's a PR trick that, like, I didn't create. Democrats should know this. But Yeah, you know.
All right. Well, we're gonna have to we're gonna have to go here, and you're gonna have to go.
I've gotta go eat my sandwich.
Replenish your blood sugar.
Yes.
John Aramosis from the Unprecedented Podcast, patreon.com/unprecedented. Podcast link in the description below. America blog, you gotta follow it every damn day. And yep. One last thing, screw Facebook.
Oh yeah, that's a whole other issue. Yeah,
take care, folks. Bye-bye.
Bye guys.